Hi, everybody. This is Ramble Redhead Show, and I'd like to welcome you today. I'm just recording with my mic that's on my MacBook Pro just to do a quick introduction. But the rest of the show is going to simply be a session that was recorded at the PodCamp New York with all the queer casters. And I thought I'd go ahead and share it with you, and I thought you might find it interesting. And Remarkable Mark is the one that was the host of the session, and so you'll be hearing mostly him, but then you'll hear all the other different people interact. I don't say too much in this show because there was a lot of people, and wanted to see what was going to be said. But I think you might enjoy it, and I hope you do, and take care. Bye-bye.
All right, let's go ahead and start. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the QueerCast panel here at PodCamp NYC, and we're just going to make this really informal. My name is Mark Tafoya. I run the Culinary Podcast Network, and I also have a little hobby podcast called the Remarkably Mark Podcast. And a lot of people in here kind of know each other, but I'm really glad that we have some people who don't or who are sort of new. And basically, I'd like this just to be an open discussion, everyone sort of talking about whatever they think is sort of pertinent. I have a few sort of ideas or topics that we can maybe throw out there, but I really think that this can be a casual panel. First of all, does anyone have like any sort of like ideas?
I have something.
Yeah, David, introduce yourself. Yeah.
My name is David Vess, and I'm a graduate student at the Library School at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And I'm actually here representing that library. It's one of the world's largest research libraries. We're interested in developing a model for a repository of podcasts. And the only way I could get my library director to agree to something like this was to focus on a very specific subject. Because I'd love to get everything in iTunes, but that's not going to happen. But I'm here to just talk with people who may be interested in submitting their content for a permanent archive at the University of Illinois in our library. What your thoughts and feelings are about archiving and preservation issues around your material. For some people who have syndicated programs in some sort of a nature, that's one thing. But for all of you who do this on your own CDs, you have all these nuggets and gold and comments and casts and things like that floating around, and I worry about them all disappearing one day, and I don't want to let that happen. So.
That's actually a really great topic of discussion, and would be, given the short nature of our talk here, I think that would be a great way to talk. I mean, I think, let's like go around the room and everyone say who they are, what they, you know, what they do. People who maybe don't have a podcast can say what their interest in podcast is, kind of like David just introduced, so.
Yeah, and I'm not a podcast.
Richard, do you want to start?
Yeah, Richard Bluestein, I work for Pod Show, and I also produce some podcast East Radio, and Insane Films, and I run that website, QPodder, which is a gay podcaster.
Right, which is a great, like, we can talk about, like, communities, and that's another thing we can go, you know, queer casters, QPodder, that kind of thing. Come on in, guys, join us. All right, Mark?
I'm Bicycle Mark. I'm a podcast journalist. I live in Amsterdam, and I tend to get around to reporting.
Yeah.
And, I've been a close friend of QPodder.org since the beginning, and I also help Richard with
He houses me in Amsterdam.
All right.
For the eclectic news brief.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Okay, Tina Alexander, and I work in product development. So we're looking at podcasts, and I'm just looking to learn more.
Great, welcome.
My name's Brent. I have littlefatty.com, Larry Vader, all that good stuff.
I'm Chris. I'm a former podcaster, and just here to see what's going on.
I'm Tim. I'm the host of Go Rainbow Radio. I promote independent dance music and other artists, mostly gay, but gay-friendly as well.
Tom, Ramble Redhead Show. I do a lot of interviews with people from our community and just talking about their lives and the coming out process and just trying to put a positive message about our community and telling the truth.
Nick McNeely, co-host and producer of Question of the Week, which is a video blog where we go out in New York, ask a different question each week, get responses and put it to IndieTunes, and put it up on the web. We have a user-generated site that goes along with it called itnotnow.net.
I'm kicking all on our own just into social media. Don't podcast, but I'm interested in
Great.
I'm Jeffrey Kiefer. I also don't podcast at all. I'm an instructional designer, and I teach organizational communications.
I'm Dick Wolfley from channel125.com. It's not a podcast, but it kind of has the same kind of content and material. Looks more like real TV, and I'm looking to see how I can do a little bit more making it look like a podcast.
Okay, great.
Tristan, my podcast is Jaded City, and I also
run queercasters.com.
My name's V. John Tran. A lot of my friends call me VJ for short, and I do a personal audio journal at VJNetcast.com.
My name is Brad Trainer, and I do the Wanda Wisdom podcast and Big Gay News podcast. And now I'm doing both those podcasts for Lavender Media, which is the GLBT media company that basically our main product is Lavender Magazine, which is a local GLBT publication.
My name is Mark Garatelli. I'm the social network manager for the Orlando International Fringe Festival, and I have a bunch of podcasts through imakepodcasts.com. They involve comedy, improv, as well as corporate podcasting.
My name is David Buckingham, and I have a podcast called The Occasional Fag. We, with my podcast friend here, Brian, we cover some social politics and sex on occasion, and once in a while, maybe even a roller coaster, because we like to ride roller coasters. We come from an activist background, so we kind of, our podcast kind of covers politics that way from an activist background.
My name's Mark, and I do a variety of different things, one of which is whorehole.org. And my friend Cheryl Murkowski, very offensive, good times.
Yeah.
I'm Brian Griffin, and I'm the other half of the Occasional Fag.com.
I'm Orlando, and this is Dennis, and we both do GoRainbowRadio.com. We do a Hollywood gossip brief portion of the radio.
So. Yeah. Thank you all. This is so cool. Like, I think what's interesting here is that, to speaking to what David asked, we have a really wide range of topics here. I mean, it's interesting. We're united in the sense that there's this GLBT interest, yet, you know, we all sort of have our own thing and do our own thing, and our shows are really widely varying. You know, this archive would be actually kind of interesting. So you're saying that you think that there would be a dividing line between people who are already syndicated and not? Was that kind of your question?
No, the point of that was, in terms of preservation issues, I'm worried about those of you who back up your things on external hard drives or media and don't, you know, have someone else backing it up somewhere else, as you told me once, and I thank God somebody's doing that. But that's going to get lost somehow if you move or something like that.
Okay.
Material that people are producing.
All right. So I think about like the Lincoln Center Archive for musical theater, how they're just recording all the shows and
right.
keeping
there's
a permanent record.
There's an entity that's, and like with Wanda Wisdom, there's I'm more comfortable at night going to sleep knowing that Wanda Wisdom stuff is at least at Lavender Media, because there's an organization that holds that content. But for those of you who aren't affiliated with some sort of an organization, it's more likely to get lost.
Okay.
And that's what I'm worried about.
There was somebody who was talking a similar thing last year at Video Blog Europe, and it was along the same lines, but nothing ever came of it. But he was wanting to do a sort of an archive where every podcast would have some sort of universal number, almost like a UPC code.
Nice.
And then that would like be a permanent way to catalog it on any system. And then, but he was talking about archiving it way into the future. Like, what if it's digital media? Does that mean it's going to get erased? You know, as a time capsule.
I see. Yeah,
you know, like long term,
or an ISBN or something like that. Believe it or not, there are a lot of algorithms that can be used, like with meta searching.
Yeah.
You can go to a website and it searches lots of different holes and different plots of information, and it can put together, say, Wanda X, Y, and Z, and give you something also. But the idea of some sort of a universal code is interesting too. Yeah.
So of those people who are in the room who have their own podcast that maybe aren't affiliated with some kind of media company, is that something that interests you? Would you think, would I want my personal journal podcast preserved for 20 years to come? Or do you want it to be like, I don't want to remember that?
Also, I'll preface this before anyone says anything, that at the core of this would be a deep respect for intellectual property issues, that this material is your content, it's not ours, and we don't want to own it, but we do want to save it for the next, you know, 1,000 years or whenever we blow up, you know, all over the time.
I guess this is saying that the archive.org isn't enough, right? Is that what?
They don't do podcasts. They don't do the media.
And you're talking about the Internet Archive.
I mean, I can put my MP3s.
Right, but Internet Archive, like the Wayback Machine, it's more like that, like where it automatically would, you know, you don't have to upload it. He would just be mirroring it.
Kind
of.
Oh, yeah.
The Wayback Machine has a mirror of the rest of the net. Okay.
No, because I always had faith in the fact that if I also upload my stuff to archive.org, that will be there later.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
And you're speaking of specifically for queer content or just podcasting in general?
Of queer content, the power of having such a collection. I mean, it gives us prestige, but I'm a big old queer, and I want your voices to be preserved. That's,
yeah.
You know, the idea of
right.
this. Definitely.
I mean, I guess it also raises a larger question that I wanted to talk about and get people's thoughts on, you know, is there such a thing as a queer community? You know, I was thinking, like, we're here, we're queer, now what? You know, like, is there such a thing as a queer community? Should there be? Must there be? Or maybe must there not be?
In terms of podcasting, there is, in a sense. But, I mean, like, Larry Kramer just thought of the interview that he had at Democracy Now! Where he talked about us as a population, not a community. Because we cross communities.
Yeah.
I think we are.
What's the difference?
Because we're more than a community. We're many communities. And so maybe it's a definition of terms that's important. Not so much what you call it, but what you're saying about it. But in terms of podcasting, there certainly is. I don't know what it, you know.
And would thinking of it in those terms open things up in terms of, I mean, I think there might be a perception, and we can probably speak to this, there might be a perception that it's this very insular world, right? Everyone knows each other. It's kind of this in crowd or a clique of people who sort of know each other. And then, I mean, have you guys heard the same feedback? I've sort of on occasion got feedback. It's like, oh, y'all sort of have your own inside jokes and we don't really get it. Would thinking in terms of a population and not a community bring sort of a different spin on things for people?
Can I see?
Of course. This is just a totally open discussion. Everyone talk, whatever. Say what you think.
Of the category is gay podcasting. I mean, there's like comedy podcasting and there's political podcasting. It would never even occur to me to think of my podcast as like it's part of a gay podcasting community. I mean, yours is about food. It's not about gay, it's about food, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like our content should be this, well, I mean, I'm just sort of rambling, redhead. It's kind of like my comedy podcast happens to be gay, it goes in comedy, yours is comedy, you should go into comedy. I don't know why we have to pigeonhole ourselves into this little, we are all gay,
category.
So our content should be labeled gay.
I think there's two different things. There's content and then there's the people creating the content. And I think in terms of community, we've experienced more of a sense of community around those who are creating the content versus how our content has been classified, because our content can be classified in 100 different ways. So, the minute you put comedy on my podcast, it turns off a certain audience. So it's bigger than just comedy. So that's just a way for people to those types, to me, of identifiers like comedy, news, are a way to attract people to our content. But in terms of community, for me, when I think of it, I think of the relationships built as a result of the people creating the content and sharing the technology. Not so much maybe as we're one monolithic content creator, content provider, audience member, like we're all in this sort of bubble together. But it's kind of, you know, the people in this room really being the community, and then the people that are listening to the shows.
So there's like the community people who make the content, there's the community people who listen to the content.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not exclusive. Like, it's not, nobody's content is just gay, insofar as none of us are just gay.
One thing I'd like to say about that is, you know, I've read a lot of controversy about, you know, should iTunes have a gay and lesbian director?
Right.
And,
okay.
You know, my feeling is, I guess I'm curious, I would rather have my gay and lesbian be a subcategory to every directory entry instead of, like, directory. And, like, I would rather have a music category with gay as a subcategory rather than being lumped into a gay category with everybody else. I think, you know, if someone's looking for an independent gay music artist, the first thing they're going to think is music. And then they're going to go, oh, well, are there any gay ones out there? Cool, let me find it that way.
Okay.
That's my thought.
This is so funny. This is a library school class on classification.
Right.
And we've been dealing with this for, you know, 200 years now on how to, like, organize all this stuff. And you can have many access points. It can be food. It can be LGBT. It can be New York. It can be anything that the access points can be anything or something. So it depends on how much money you want to spend on cataloging, say, for a library, for example.
I don't understand access point. What do you mean?
Access point is a list of links that, say, you have a subject heading list and it has LGBT on it, but it also has culinary podcasts or it has
humor, it has drag queen.
So like tags or something?
Tags, and you click on that and it gives you everything that's in that nest of, that list of drag queens, say for example, stuff like that. That's,
and you know, so if I was in the gay sort of category, it would show me music, food, drag queens, all the different stuff. Okay.
Ideally, a system would be in place that would allow for multiple entry points to this kind of content material.
And you know, somebody I work with had kind of a lot of conversations about this with the guy that does the iTunes directory, and he basically said, look, you know, we can change the directory, however, it's not really that big a deal. We've only changed it once, and it's a huge problem. Everyone has to change the feeds, Feedburner has it, it's a huge deal. And he said, but the real thing is, people don't browse. They search by keyword, or they look at the front page. That's it. So it's kind of like, I think, what you're saying about tags, it's really about the keywords.
So if we're already tagging and keywording our stuff properly, then it sort of shouldn't matter?
If you're tagging gay, then you're basically on the gay podcast directory, or GLBT podcast.
Sort of by de facto.
I did a few weeks ago put a gay LGBT section on the, somewhere.
Okay.
Not a directory.
Not on iTunes.
Yeah, on iTunes.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. It wasn't a directory, but it was just sort of a featured thing.
Which then begs the next question, well, how do they come across? I mean, when you're talking about iTunes, there's always a lot of politics involved, sort of who gets featured, how do they get featured, is there any kind of, is there any openness as to how they choose what they choose?
There's two things they use. It's the number of times you press the subscribe button is how the top 100 get determined. That's purely by the number of times the subscribe button gets pressed.
Within a certain period?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. No one knows that.
But it's the stuff of the day, so I'm pretty sure that's just 24 hours. The other stuff, like the placement, is basically a weighting of the rating, the number of stars on your recommendations combined with the number of people that rated you. So it's like if you're rated 5 times for 5 stars and I'm rated 1 time for 5 stars, you're higher than me. It's that.
Yeah. Regardless of numbers of subscriptions during that period, or are they sort of combined?
They're separate things.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
All right. This actually then might be a good point to talk about QPodder and Queercasters, because obviously if iTunes is sort of seen as this default way that most people consume their podcasts, and there's these issues, or maybe just it doesn't work for people the way that they want it to work, obviously, there's been a couple of different attempts to create something, and I'd just like to hear about sort of both of your experiences with developing what you've developed and, you know, us as users and what we think about, you know, like, maybe sort of towards this whole issue. Is there really a community? And if there is, you know, should it be represented in a particular way? Tristan, do you have thoughts about, you know, like your development of Queercasters?
I mean, I think when people are, like, promoting their podcasts, they shouldn't only focus on one thing. You should be like listing it in many different places. Queercasters is for people who are looking for podcasts that are hosted by gay people, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not the end all be all. It's not the only place where you should list. You should go everywhere. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, you know, we're all gay, but we do different subjects. We do all kinds of different stuff, and, I'm rambling now.
I remember you've told me at times that your focus with Queercasters was for the user, the end user, and making their experience easier than,
unlike,
otherwise.
QPodder, I specifically, you know, there's no forums, there's no how to podcast, there's no... it's not a podcast. It's not to help podcasters learn how to podcast. It's for people to find the content.
Okay.
Because I thought, you know, when a normal everyday person goes to a podcast directory, sometimes their eyes glaze over because they see all this technical geek stuff that scares them away. So that's why I created Queercasters.
Yeah, and that's always been the intent of QPodder. Is it's geared towards podcasters, not towards listeners.
Okay,
yeah.
So in a way, so we're talking about two different approaches to it.
Audience or producer,
Yeah, okay. Speak about QPodder and sort of the genesis of it.
Well, the genesis was when iTunes came out and, you know, there was no LGBT. As far as the community goes, there is a community. And if you look around the room and see how a lot of us know each other, we know each other because it's a community. Because, I mean, the community exists, you know, so... to me, it's not a question of do we need one. It's like we have one already. And it's good. And I
they brought us into the deluxe room, by the way.
I see it as a really good thing. Because in the big picture, what I see is a social movement towards healthy ways of gay people socializing as opposed to unhealthy ways like bars and websites about sex. You know, and that's the difference between like CubeCutter and like a gay.com where you see it's all sex-based. It's all encouraging all these stereotypes. But what we're doing as podcasters is encouraging gay people to do constructive things. Mm-hmm. You know, and be productive, and it's, I think it's very positive, and you can build relationships that are useful for, you know.
Okay, so how do we reach out beyond sort of the usual suspects, so to speak, the people who already know who we are and how to find us? How do we sort of create audience beyond that? You know, reaching and maybe even reaching beyond a queer audience. You know, into a general audience or people who just, you know, want interesting content that might happen to be made by queer people. Do people have thoughts on, like, unusual marketing attempts or things you've tried that maybe was, you know, out there? Different from, you know, listing yourself on iTunes, you know, putting your posts on CubeCutter or QueerCasters or,
well,
you know, things like that.
Just talk about other podcasters and go to their shows and people hear about them through that. And to go outside of just the queer podcasting community, I like Girl 600, she's a straight black woman and she podcasts, and people hear about me through her and vice versa. So just interact with other people other than just gay people.
Yeah, okay. Well, good. All right.
I get a lot of people from MySpace. Yeah. People put my show, Lady Ratcastic, on their top friends. And their friends go to their profile and see the picture, click on it, and they usually, either they like it or they don't. So.
And there's something a little more interactive about using MySpace as a tool than, say, some others, right?
Yeah, because it's a whole website. I mean, you can look at, when you look at iTunes, it's like a picture, a paragraph, and other people who subscribe, that's it.
Yeah.
When you go to MySpace, it's a whole website. You can put video, audio, and comments.
You can see how popular themselves. Do you put the podcast in the MySpace, or do you?
Yeah,
use
Flash player.
Use a Flash player. Okay.
I put the video podcast,
the
audio podcast.
And have you, in terms of growing your numbers, have you found that MySpace is really the key for you in terms of growing your numbers?
Most of our audience comes from that. Yeah.
I would have to say the same thing. Fucking MySpace.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess each thing we talk about, obviously, there are inherent issues in it simply because it has its own interests, right? I mean, they're either generated by a commercial interest or it sort of is this phenomenon of its own. And you're sort of, you know, grabbing the tail of the comet, so to speak.
I'm just stubborn. The only reason I don't do MySpace is because of Rupert Murdoch owns it, and I don't like his politics.
Yeah.
Well, it's also the dumbing down of internet content and. You know, but the problem is, yeah, I agree with you. I'm a little stubborn as well. I'm on there, but it's more for social things, for friends, not as a podcaster. Although, you know, that'll be on there. But for me, it's always stubbornness because I wish that MySpace and that sort of logic on the internet hadn't become the standard. You know, I've been back in the U.S. now for 2 weeks, just, you know, on a visit. I haven't lived here for 5-6 years, but I've noticed just being here in people's everyday conversations, MySpace has become as normal as talking about email. People snapping pictures around New York City will go, "This one's going on MySpace," and I'm just like, "You can put it anywhere else."
Of all of the platforms that exist with really rich content, yeah, okay.
Well, critical mass thing. I mean, they have the user community, and that
I know, and so we consider
self reinforcing.
Yeah. So in the end, what you do is probably a damn good idea.
What would be some other options besides MySpace that people?
Any kind of networking technology that you can leverage, like Twitter. I think you can lose friends in Twitter.
Twitter's good.
Yeah, yeah. Has anyone used Twitter yet so far into promoting their podcast?
Oh, yeah, great.
Talk about what you've done in order to use Twitter to promote the podcast.
This was video blogging week. And, you know, I've already got all these video blog people in the community because it's a whole other community, not gay. And, you know, so every time one of us posts a video blog, you know, day one, we post it. It's easy.
And then you tweet about it, and that's how people. I'm thinking in terms of like going beyond like your user group, right? Because I believe in terms of Twitter, it's people who are, they kind of already have to know who you are, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think for video, there's a lot of other options because there video's a lot more grassroots. So
yeah.
There you have YouTube and you have MeFeedia, which is a fantastic director, which is actually where I get most of my hits by far. You know, which is you know, there's all these like sort of less commercial things with video. Blip, definitely. Blip.
Talk about Blip, Mark.
It's just it's you upload your videos. I just started video blogging, and compared to, like, YouTube is the MySpace of video upload sites, I think I would say. And Blip is the, I don't know, just more sophisticated, better interface.
Yeah, Blip is better, but it's different.
Okay.
The Blip is a business. They provide advertising, you know, they do that stuff. YouTube is, they host stuff and have ads.
Yeah.
I just wanted Brian? To about YouTube, as a bit of activism on my part, I mean, because we're the occasional fag, I did a search on MySpace and found everyone who had fag in their title. And if you went to a lot of these sites, you found there were young kids who were like, put someone else's photo, but I literally friended everyone who had fag in their title.
Great idea.
Because one of the ideas is disarm the world.
That's
by
viral.
Expanding on it.
I love it.
I made about, I don't know, I only got, I think, like 30 friends out of it. Mm-hmm. I literally went through, okay, friending anyone who has fag. Because so that they don't own the word so much. And you know, a lot of them just posted it and then disappeared. But that was a form of activism.
I was banned from YouTube, permanently banned from YouTube for posting three videos. One of them was Wanda Wisdom using a wind-up toy as a vibrator with all of her clothes on and her panties on. I mean, there's some...
So it was about the video, not about the words you used to tag it?
I mean, the other stuff, I did a search for vibrators, and it was like all these women, like, using actual vibrators on their actual vaginas. You know, why was it... This is where the... That's a whole other thing.
Maybe it was the wig.
There's no... it was kind of natty.
Well, and now it comes from the fact that it's community-based. So a community member can simply say,
yeah.
And now there's, I think there's even another layer that they've added where you can get tagged with, somebody can tag you as possibly offensive, so anybody who doesn't have a YouTube account has to have an account before they can view your video. So it really allows people to censor one another by saying, I judge your content to be offensive. Which is part of the struggle that people like us on the fringe,
right.
So to speak, have in distributing our content, because all of a sudden we're back dealing with the same, frustration and prejudice and homophobia that, you know, traditional media has sort of foiled.
And, Brad, when you say on the fringe, are you referring to just gay content, or you mean on the fringe of podcasting in terms of the way that you do your shows?
Mainstream society.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, YouTube is like the mainstream society of internet video, and you deal with all the prejudices and stupidity.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, though.
And they make it
your
easy
effort
to do, which is what is
to push it.
And the problem is, nine people out of ten are typically, on average, straight. So they're a lot more likely to gang up on gay people than we are, like we would. I see a lot of this community. You know, what do they call it? Community monitoring and. You know, censorship, basically. I don't like it, and I think it's part of the reason why...
Neighborhood watch program, so to speak.
Yeah. I don't buy it. I don't think people... But this is a whole other topic, really, the whole censorship thing.
Was this ban...
But it's germane, so, you know...
Yeah. Was this ban enacted on you before this other layer was added, where you had to be a registered user? Did it happen before?
No, it was pretty good. It was a few months ago.
No, I just know that I found out because I'm logged in all the time. You know, it's my account, so whenever I go to the site, I'm logged in, and... If you're logged in with an account, you don't see if your stuff is being... If you have to go through a layer to get to the content. But because I logged in somewhere else where I hadn't been logged in before, when I went to access one of my videos, completely non-sexual, none of my videos show anything pornographic, but because the content is queer, it was in drag, then it said, a user has identified this content as possibly offensive. You must have an account before you can view it.
Yep. Female breasts.
And men in drag. Yeah, I mean, my stuff was just me in drag. Nothing sexual.
So,
in the sense of there may have been some sort of suggestive sexuality, but nothing certainly beyond the pale of...
Yeah. I mean, there were three videos of mine that caused my suspension. I knew which ones they were. Two were basically... trailers for a friend of mine who does independent filmmaking, and they had like completely artistic and non-sexual pictures of women's breasts, and the other one was Wanda.
I had one video banned because I filmed this little queen I was keeping, 22 years old, and she's swishing, all you see is her ass swishing through the kitchen at me. She does her glamour thing in front of the mirror, and I said, call me bitch, and I said, this video shows how how a real bitch deals with a real, how a real man deals with a real bitch, because she says, get me some vodka. And I say, should I, what should I call you? She says, call me bitch. I said, miss this or miss, miss, all right.
Was there a chain around her waist, maybe?
Yeah. Videos I thought maybe someday I should take down. It's up on VO, and it's also up on Blip.
Okay.
But on YouTube, it was removed. It said unfit content.
So any person can just decide that it's unfit, and thereby...
Apparently there was a case in which I was obviously was saying, oh, you know, you just wish you could rub me down, and I sort of heard. I mean, it was an older man flirting with a younger guy. It involved Hustler John undertones. He was kept, but, you know, I mean, but I was right there using up all my shit.
It was a
bubble bath. You could have a guy purring over any, you know, and all you saw was no dick. It was just as
yeah.
Does everybody know Randolph Wicker?
I'm Randy Wicker.
He's behind the camera.
I have another video you might find interesting on YouTube. It's called YouTube Video Thieves. My most popular video, I had to go through sort of a moral crisis. I filmed these two boys. I knew they were, you know, in their teens, dancing outside at the Jersey City Fair. And I put it up and called it Gang of Voguing. Only because they weren't voguing. They were bumping and grinding and turning it out. And, you know, it was doing pretty well. It had about 8,000 or 9,000 hits. And I have this as video, YouTube Video Thieves. How many are there? So one day I'm looking at my own video, and I see the exact same picture over there with something called AskTony.com. And what he had done is he had stolen my video, and he had no credits. It was his video, right? But what the amazing thing was, I had gotten 9,000 hits in like 4 months, and he was up to like 32,000 hits in 1 month. So he was beating me, I figured it out, at a rate of 12 times to 1. I said, this guy, on the one hand, I'm furious, but on the other hand, this guy knows something I don't know. So I checked out his tags, and this is very important. I was going to add this earlier when I read it. The tags included legitimate ones like, you know, dancing, boys,
New Jersey Fair, you know, things like that.
And obviously studying the tag words, but what I learned from him is I copied all of his tag words except the two legitimate ones, and my rates now, that's the most watched. I just broke 40,000. He's probably up over 100,000. It's called Gay Young Love, or Gay Young Love Dancing is what I called it. But what I'm saying, that's something that's very important. I have not realized. I'll tell you, every time I put a video up on YouTube, I keep typing the tags until I run out of space. Like, you cannot have too many tags in your video because you never know what person is picking your tags. I never knew webcam was this. People look for webcam. They're really looking for videos of people that are naked in front of their webcams. And I never even thought of that as a search term.
And talk about marketing, you know, I mean, ways that we can learn to get other people to find our stuff. So one question I want to go before we sort of end the topic of this whole censorship thing is, would it be just as easy if there were like 3 13-year-old guys on skateboards, you know, being idiots, and I said, oh, I think this is offensive? Would it be just as easy for that to happen to them? Or do you feel like this really is a targeted thing?
No, it's not as easy for that because, you know, they don't have... There's no, like, movement against skateboarders. There is this concerted movement by a lot of people, extremists, that do not like us and want us to not exist.
Mm-hmm. Not extremists.
Attack the skateboarders is inappropriate.
But I guess the question is, like, but then would that have the same effect? Like, would then only registered users be able to see it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so it's just a...
it's got to be an algorithm.
It's just a program. Okay, so no one is sitting there going, oh, yes, you know, you're right, it is kind of offensive, and I'm going to take it off.
No, nobody's deciding. It's just the computer. I mean, you can question it, but...
I think what they do is that once it's tagged offensive, then somebody on their staff probably goes through and watches the videos. And so then they decide if they will kick you off or not.
But they'll never respond, because I've sent numerous emails just to see if I ever get a response. Nobody ever responds.
Yeah.
Add one thing with relation to this is that in iTunes, what I've noticed is that if you look at the explicit text, look at any category, say comedy, if you look at the gay ones, you'll find that like you know, by far, most of the gay podcasts have explicit tags and the straight ones don't. And that's us censoring ourselves. And I think that's really interesting.
Now, do you think that's censorship, or do you think people just figured out if it's got an explicit tag, people will say, oh, I got to listen to this?
No, I think it's self-censorship.
Really? Okay.
How is it censorship? I mean, you're not stopping yourself from saying anything. You're just tagging yourself in a manner that...
Right, but you're stopping... a certain population from seeing it. You're stopping children from seeing it. People under 18, and there's a lot of kids that, you know, commit suicide because they're afraid to come out of the closet. They need to see this. You know, if they have the parental control zone, you know, and it's, I think it's a very sociological statement that we're reinforcing ourselves. You know, I mean, the question is, why is it explicit? My show is definitely explicit, regardless. But if it's somebody's gay and they're talking about gay relationships and gay sex, I don't think it should be explicit.
You're saying when you use explicit tags, even if the material isn't explicit, it's sort of bringing the censorship on ourselves?
Okay. Because I know that some people say, oh, well, I put the explicit tags so that, you know, I can say whatever the hell I feel, or whatever the fuck I want, and then I won't get in trouble later. I'm sort of covering myself.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people that do that and don't have explicit tags, and nobody cares. And a lot of, you know, it's like, why are gay people so much more interested in putting that tag on?
Okay.
It's just a point of thought. I mean,
it's interesting.
I have seen words like fuck or cock, or I mean, I never tried it. I never thought of using those, or dick. I mean, or
without a tag,
can you use those as a tag?
Yeah.
Hello.
These two are the masters of that, by the way. Just talk to them afterwards. They'll give you a whole course.
You asked earlier about how other ways to promote your podcast, and one thing I did was I actually used video podcasting to promote my podcast.
Yeah.
We were like, how do we take my podcast and make it into a video podcast? And we finally figured out how to do it. And then at the end of the video, it was like 1 to 2 minutes, we put the link to actually my MySpace page. So that's another way to draw people to your podcast, is you used another medium.
And you put that onto YouTube?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, right. So just the sheer velocity of YouTube sort of can grab you some audience that might not have been looking for your audio podcast.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be YouTube, though. I mean, video... I don't post anything on YouTube, but videos are basically at least 10 times more popular than audio. It's just booming like crazy.
People want to watch.
Yeah.
Visuals.
Yeah.
Well, and I was just going to say, you're creating, I mean, like for me, it's a brand, it's a character, whatever you want to call it, and there are so many different ways to draw people into it and then let them consume what they want. So there are people that just watch videos that I do, there are people that just listen to podcasts, there are people that just literally look at the photos that I put up. There's a whole community of people through Flickr and other photo sharing sites that relate to the character. And, you know, then if they know at some point they want to interact to a different level, there are all these different channels. And you really do have to spend, I mean, you know, time more than I would like looking to see where people are interacting and networking socially. And then, you know, finding out what that medium can then give that character, that brand. So you're not just indiscriminately. I mean, there's one thing to be said for just putting your links everywhere you can to sort of cover your tracks. But then to step back and be smart about it and say, what is this medium, like Twitter, going to allow me to do differently that I can't do with my... Because it's, you know, Twitter is nothing unique. It's just how you apply it that can then maybe bring in a different type of consumer to your character or product.
Okay.
And if I may clarify, what I was asking as well is, I understand MySpace, I've been on there. I don't find MySpace compelling at all. So I'm curious what other things like MySpace are out there. Does that make sense? That might be more compelling to just...
Like other community-based, like Friendster-type things where you're friending each other kind of thing?
There's a website called D-List. There's a website called D-List, which is MySpace, but it's only gay. And it's very, very, very popular, and I get a lot of listeners from it. So,
And Glee is a new one. D-List is maybe more... just from my own experience, kind of sexy-er.
Yeah.
And Glee.com is a new one that was, I think, put out by a guy, one of the guys who started Logo, maybe, or some connection. And it's MySpace for the gays, and it's still very small, but it's just another...
So the idea being then you take it out of the equation, you take this sort of push and pull between people who might like not want us there, and we just say, okay, fine, we have one that is just this, so anyone who's going to be on there is going to be welcoming of it. The key then is getting the numbers, you know, sort of like a critical mass to it that would make it sort of self-sustaining, right?
And there's this new one, Yoast. Have you seen Yoast?
No,
it's a private beta, but It's very.
That's a Dutch.
It's
one,
amazing.
Right? Yeah.
It's actually, I think it's Italian, just as a Dutch name.
Oh, okay.
It's like just watching TV. It's like watching TV. It's very commercial. They have commercials. They have mainstream channels. But they have a chat room that's kind of like overlaid on the screen. So you can actually chat about the show with other people while it's playing. It's
oh, God.
Yeah.
Wow. You put some queers in there and the fur will fly. So
how are they spelling that? How are
they? Yoast. J-O-O-S-T.
People yeah. call it juiced.
Yeah. But it's Dutch.
Email, I can send you an invite once I get more of them.
Okay. So, Nick, as someone who does an exclusively video podcast, tell us a little bit about sort of ways that you've marketed the production.
We're working on that. It's blogging. It's going on MySpace and trying to do an account, but I don't find that compelling. So it's blogging, try to connect, chat. We actually started it because we started a user generated site, but to connect people that were just to create larger thinking in their lives. So we thought, well, let's promote that with a video podcast. So that's kind of how the video podcast was born.
Yeah.
But it's been more popular than the actual site.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's trying to figure out how to market those things and just coming to places like this, joining okay. media groups.
Well, it sounds also like the questions are quite provocative and make you think, right? I mean, that's the idea of the podcast.
Right. And so it's not day-based at all. I had never even thought about that really when we began. So it's just that question that makes you think each week. So it's trying to find the niche within that, because it's not MySpace. That's not what you go there for necessarily. So I'm looking for that. I don't know what that is.
Right.
Well, there's also the company we work for, that has something like that. But I don't like to, in this kind of form, it's grassroots. But
well, you can talk about it. I mean, it's fine.
No, because we're building a directory. We have it's a community for podcasters. It has the friends and all that. You upload videos. Podcast, it's basically what it's for.
Right. Yeah. I have a question. Has anyone gotten any decent support from the print gay press? I mean, I subscribe to Planet Out, but I haven't yet seen any mention of the existence of gay podcasts.
Turn your camera this way and let Brad talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, the company that I work for, I started the podcast on my own, did it on my own for about a year. Then since May of last year, I've been working for Lavender Media, which is the print press for Minnesota, the gay print press for Minnesota, and they wanted to expand the way that they interacted with people, grow their audience, and so podcasting and video podcasts and other web stuff is kind of initiatives for them. So, yeah. I mean, it's very rare. The other one is Windy City Media Group.
Oh, yeah.
Out of Chicago, they do podcasts. It's only a matter of time, probably, for other...
I'm talking about articles and any of that. Right.
Like mainstream press covering what we're doing?
Out magazine,
four or five major gay newspapers or magazines. I haven't seen any mention of the existence.
That's been weird. I've noticed that too. I mean, there was something in Out magazine a long time ago. There was Lady Bunny's column in Genre a long time ago. But by and large, the gay press doesn't talk about it. It's weird. I don't know why.
I think everyone should jump on the article about Southern Voice in Atlanta did run an article about gay podcasters.
Okay.
But there's also it's definitely worth and it would be nice if it happened more often, but even in terms of regular media, you've taught me this. No matter how many times you get mentioned in print media, be it mainstream, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And that's happened to me not so often.
It's a different population.
People don't read the newspaper and then go over to their computers and type in. We might, because we're more active, but the passive, asleep audience doesn't do it.
And with rare exceptions, such as Lavender, they're not the traditional print media probably isn't thinking about new media, and they're probably thinking, "Oh boy, they're either bugs to be squashed, or they're something to be feared, and therefore we want to hold on to our market share."
And that's what Windy City does. They can tell an advertiser, "We give you podcasting, daily magazine or weekly magazine plus we give you our pink pages or something."
Yeah.
So that's what they offer. So they can market it for the
It's
future.
Much more lucrative when you start adding, I can serve you up to five different audiences instead of just saying you can only reach people this way. And right now, just podcasting alone is going to be a much harder sell if you can't give an advertiser something they're more used to.
But it's
changing, and we're in the...
Each gay paper in Chicago has a conflict of interest if they do a report. That's the problem, I think.
Yeah.
Expand upon that. What do you mean? What causes the conflict of interest?
Well, people that work for them have podcasts themselves, so it's a little bit of an issue. Like Windy City has a podcast, you know?
Right?
So it's kind of weird.
So the idea of promoting other podcasts doesn't really fly with them.
I don't know.
I mean, it's an interesting question in terms of podcasts, and this is not specifically related to Queercast, but I mean, the whole, you know, the Culinary Podcast Network came out of this idea. One day I'm thinking, you know, I used to think in terms of competition, like, oh, I'm competing with all these other food podcasts, just like the TV or the radio. And then I dawned on me, I'm like, no, I'm not. People can listen to all of them, and because I listen to all of them. So, duh, why don't I just get them all together and we'll just have one network where you can do that.
Absolutely.
And with podcast, it's, I mean, the way that people consume it is different. So even the notion that there is competition is kind of silly to think about it in a way. I mean,
that's a really good point, because I've seen a lot of people get competitive and it's a natural thing to do, but podcasting needs more people we need to build the audience as a whole. And the more people that get audience, they're getting audience of, you know, we need to get audience of people that don't listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we need, and that's going to help everyone. So competing is just defeats the purpose.
There's enough for everybody.
Yeah. And then do we reach out in terms of our content and maybe make an effort not to make it so insular or turned in? I mean, I don't know. I've heard some comments of people say, "Oh, it's just, you know, like I said, just a bunch of people who know each other talking about inside jokes." And it's something to think about. Ah, so maybe there's people who might want to listen to our shows who say, oh, but I listened to a couple and I didn't get the inside jokes and it seemed like they were all friends and then they just go on each other's
podcasts.
So keep
listening until you find the inside jokes that you identify with, or because I think that
depends on what you want.
Well, I think isn't that what people used to say about blogs? That blogs are just people like writing about their life and talking about things.
Three of your friends and your mother read your blog. Yeah.
And then now blogs like influence national policy.
It's okay. So just a next step in the evolution. We're just a couple steps behind the blogs in terms of that evolution.
But it's a good question about how to get there.
People want different things. Some people want to monetize. Some people don't. You know, just depends.
Yeah. All right. Well, it sounds like this has been a nice little fun discussion. Did anyone else have any like closing thoughts?
Final thought poll, really?
Yes, our librarian.
whatsoever. Yeah, how many people, like show of hands, are interested in participating in a pilot project to do an archive of queer casting? Is there enough of a come on?
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. How can I get in touch with all of you?
Well, let's, as we go, we have, this is sort of like the end of the official portion, but we can chat and talk. So if people have business cards, let's all sort of share and, all that.
I have a final thought, too.
Absolutely.
Which is, not all of us are gay, like Mark.
True, yeah.
Where do you go? That's something.
I'm allowed, basically. Well,
yeah. I mean, could he be part of it? I mean, it's
because your content is of interest to the queer community, or you have interest in the queer community.
Proof of homosexuality.
Right. Absolutely. Right. I'll be verifying in the back at the end of the show.
It is one of the biggest sources of, like we had mentioned, Faggregator. I get so much correspondence, email, new viewers because of Faggregator. Depending on the month. I get the most listeners that I like, which is people who email me and explain their story. I have patience to read all that, and a lot of them want to move to Amsterdam and are thinking about leaving the country. I get a lot of that. And a lot of this is because of Faggregator, because I'm on there, and then when the videos come down, people really enjoy them.
Explain the videos.
It's a video podcast aggregator. It just runs automatically off of everybody who's listed in QPutter, which is all, there's no screening or anything. It's just you sign up.
There's a script that you write that just sort of brings them together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it basically takes any video podcast on anybody's feed and throws it together into one feed. We have the same thing for audio podcasts, Nelligator, but it's not really practical because there's so many.
It
works well with the videos.
People just wouldn't listen to a feed that updated with 30 shows in one
day.
Which
is a problem for the future, by the way. And that's the same thing with, it's not a good closing thought, but Twitter.
Absolutely.
If everybody's on your Twitter list, I'm sorry to the people who haven't used Twitter, you're better off probably. but seriously, if everybody joins Twitter,
it's crack for geeks.
And one person, it's like that bulletin section on MySpace. Who the hell can follow that? If you have 200 friends, there's 100 bulletins every few minutes.
It scrolls faster than you can read it.
Right. Yeah,
so
okay.
Twitter, I think there's going to hit a huge wall for those people who add everybody. Because someone's going to write an important link or message, and it's going to be gone.
Get lost in it.
So I don't add people to my Twitter. I use it for a very close group of producers and listeners that I need to hear from and I want to hear from.
including the ones who were pushing it back in or pulling it back out. I get a lot of reports from Cheryl Murkowski.
Oh.
I don't mind that.
Talking about push and pull, you know. I mean, it's been a theme of the conference.
I'm really pissed off because I'm here. Every 5 minutes, it's a problem.
All right.
Speed Blitz is a free service. I use it to subscribe to Willing Warrior in L.A. and two or three other blogs. Whenever they paste a new video, I get it in an email. It'll say, you know, four messages, and I subscribe to myself,
right.
So I know it works. Yeah. So I'll get an email saying, R.H. Wicker has
a lot of people
great.
Like that.
Yeah,
and
great.
I think it's a fantastic tool. I haven't really explored it, but when you talk about, someone talked about a subscribe button, and that makes it even better than being like subscribing like on the internet, because actually Feedlets are free, sends an email whenever you add something to your RSS.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that like that. I mean, it depends on how your email box is and if you want that, but it's a good option.
All right, great. Well, thank you all so much. This has been fun. And, please, networking, trade each other's cards if you haven't already, traded cards with people. Thank you.
Thank you.